Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul. I'm your host, Valerie Parker. I'm a businesswoman, author, and speaker. My first book, From the Soul of a Woman, Love Shouldn't Hurt. My second book, Unveiling Secrets from the Heart to Giving Your Past to Free Your Future. Thirdly, Restored Vessels, Young Adults Overcoming Adversities. And my most recent release, which is a PDF format, is Unlimited Possibilities, the Roadmap to Restoration. I've got my co-host with me tonight, Shirley Carter. Shirley, are you on the line?
Yes. Good evening, everyone. I am an entrepreneur as well as a motivational speaker, and I have a nonprofit organization called Against All Odds. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Well, for the last few weeks, we've been talking about our youth and how we've got to be the change that we want to bring in the world. And the last few episodes have been powerful. So those of you who are just joining me for the first time or just listening in, if you can go to the website, blogtalkradio.com/soul topics, you'll be able to replay those shows. And we're going to continue on talking about securing the future of our youth. And since this month is foster care, National Foster Care Month, I have a young lady, a powerful woman who's working in the community, Miss E, the Heart Lady, Evelyn Polk. She's the founding director for A Child's Heart, Inc. She's the owner, clinical director of Talk to ME Counseling, producer, host of TV talk show, Visions for a Child's Heart, and she's an author of the book, It's Heart Work, Being the Village That Raises a Child. Evelyn, are you there?
Yes, I am.
I am so delighted to have you, my dear friend.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
I know you had reached out to me and said, you haven't invited me on your show, but can I be on your show this month? And I was like, sure. You know, life takes me trailing, and I always say if there's a topic or something that we need to address, you know, call me, and we'll talk about it on Hot Topics from the Soul, because Soul Topics is a lifeline to the community. We want to keep people abreast of what's going on, rather than social issues, relationship, family, finances, and more. And what you do is so very important. I've always admired you for years, the dedications and the sacrifices that you've had to make to get your work done and to be who you are. Can you share some light on your foundation?
Well, my foundation, For Child's Heart Incorporated, is a nonprofit organization that provides counseling and support services. And it started off being for adoptive families, and then I found out that there were more children not being adopted, so I extended it to foster care, and now I say it's for children who have been separated from their biological parents, because we have a lot of kinship care, we have a lot of guardianship, and children are living with lots of people, and I didn't want to limit that, because I feel that those youth go through some similar issues. Just by the separation and a lot of times being gone through many, many other placements. But it's also for the caregivers, for those who are working with the young people, to be able to hang in there with them. So I say, you know, my mission is to teach young people that they're lovable and to teach the adults how to love them through, because it's hard work.
You know, I titled the show Securing Our Youth because the last few weeks we've been talking about how there are young people that kill and abuse others because of the fact that they were products of that environment. And how important is it for us to look at, you know, being a foster care parent?
There's a commercial that's on a local business here in Northern California that says not everyone can be a foster parent, but everyone can help a foster child. And I really believe that a person who is determined to do foster care has to really be clear within themselves, because our children are having faced so many difficulties that most of us as adults still haven't faced. And if we don't have a real grip on our own emotional pain and issues, we have to work through them. So sometimes that's why children get bounced around. But my primary goal is to help people, no matter what position they're in dealing with children, just being the village, to have a different perspective of our young people. All of our young people need someone in their lives that has their back, whether they're living with them or not, someone who's consistent in their lives. Many of our young people grow up and they don't know anyone who knew them when they were in their more formative years. I know some of the relationships I've developed with young people. I have one who is going to be 40 next year, and I was a social worker when he was 11, and he says, I'm the person who's known him longest in his whole life. And I said, wow. But the key thing is for them to know that someone cares about them, someone is going to be there, come, you know, rain or shine for them. And that's the primary issue, whether you're going to be a foster parent or not, for someone to be there and who understands all the madness that they go through.
So you kind of like advocate for that child that although they have a foster parent as their main guardianship, you're actually soliciting to the community that, okay, this person has stepped up to the plate in being willing to raise this child, and we need to assist in the process.
There you go. You got it. We've got to be the village. You know, I also was a foster parent, and they're all adults now, and one I did adopt. However, I had two at a time. And I was able to do well with them, but the problem was there was only one of me. And it was very difficult for people in my extended family, people in the community, in the neighborhood, even the school, to be able to support and back up what I was trying to do with them because they didn't understand what the dynamics were. Either I was made out to be the bad guy or the kids were made out to be the bad. It was skewed one way or the other. And the reality is we were all doing what we could do with the best that we had at the time. And I really feel today, I even say the oldest one is now 30, the youngest one is 27. Actually, the oldest one is 33. And I say that, you know, I would love to do it again, but I can't do it alone because I did it as a single parent. And I look at all the different people who really want to do a better job at foster parenting. And then you have those who do it primarily for the money, even though there's not a lot of money. However, you can pocket more the less you do for the child, and unfortunately, we see a lot of that happening as well. So we have children who are bitter. We have children who have been abused. We have children who have been neglected, children who have been abandoned, and some, you know, put their energies in whatever it is that makes them feel better. Few of them, you know, invest themselves in academics. Others invest their energy into what we would consider, you know, self-destructive or self-sabotaging behavior. But underneath, it's the same thing, to escape and find a place where they feel that they, and where they feel that they have a sense of acceptance. So when you're talking about, you know, the violence and the gang-related activity and the killing, it just tears my heart out because I realize that a lot of these young people have no sense of value for life. So if we as adults continue to project negativity on them, where else are they going to go? So that's my whole thing is, you know, really save the children. And when I say the children, I mean the toddlers up to teenagers to the young adults. And the other service that I provide, because I'm a marriage family child therapist, I provided therapy, and what I found out, a lot of the young people that I've worked with, as they transition or age out of the foster care system, they still need a support system. So I've become mentor to very many. So my goal then is helping them to get the resources that they need to be able to live independently, to go to school if they decide, to get a trade, to learn a trade, become certified, so that they can become self-sufficient. But they still need what we call family, because they do not just all of a sudden become something different when they turn 18. Actually, are now changing where most states are extending the foster care age to 21 to give young people a greater chance to succeed by allowing that transition after high school to still have some cushion behind them and be able to this out and most young people are able to who have biological families.
Okay, now so when you wrote the book, It's Hard Work, Being the Village That Raises a Child, this is where that derived from, and how long did it take you to write it? And are there some true stories in the book in, you know, presenting it?
Right. Actually, the book came much after my organization, For a Child's Heart, actually is 20 years old this year. And then about 3 years, it will be the anniversary of our becoming a nonprofit, being incorporated. However, the book came along just about 4 years ago because it was developing throughout all these years. And every time something would happen, someone said, well, what happened? I said, you know, it's too much to talk about. Just read it in the book. So that became, you know, the familiar conversation. And finally, I sat down and decided to do the book. So I had been keeping a journal at some time. Other things just happened that I just could not forget. So I started writing the book, which is actually a memoir of my experience. And it was going to be about my experience being a foster and adoptive parent. But then I realized that my work in this field didn't just begin when I became a foster and adoptive parent. It went all the way back to my first work in a group home or runaway youth shelter when I was right after undergraduate school. And I thought about the young people who had really just taken residence in my heart, and especially those that I still have relationships with. So the first part of the book is entitled Working in the Village, Entering the Village. The second part of the book is entitled Bringing the Village Home. That's my personal experience. So in the first part of the book,
I'm getting a little bit of static from you, Evelyn.
Okay. Is that better?
Okay, yes.
Can you hear me? Probably, because
yes.
I'm moving. Okay, because I have to be still. But anyway, you heard the part where I said the first part is entering the village. And within that, there are about four, maybe five young people who are now young adults who I wrote about them and had them tell the story from their eyes about what it was like being a young person in whatever capacity I was working with them to tell their stories. And it was amazing to me because I didn't tell them what to write. I just asked them some questions. But the majority of all of their stories tied right in with mine. So it was amazing, and it brought tears to my eyes. And I did that, one, to give people to know that there is hope. There is hope, regardless of what it looks like. There is hope. And a lot of our adults give up on our young people too easily. And our young people will give up on themselves just because they don't know any better. They haven't lived enough of life. And so I really do that to keep me focused. But I also wanted to be able to help those who are coming along, those who are working with those coming along, to realize that it's not a piece of cake, but it is worth it. And it's necessary. It's worth it. And so how long it took me to write it, when I actually sat down and decided, okay, it's time to churn this out, I would say it took about a year.
Hmm.
It took about a year when I really became serious about it. And I've also created this past 4 months a workbook to go along with it, because a lot of people tell me, oh, I love the book, I couldn't put it down. But when I ask them what they gained from it, they really didn't do any introspection. And my whole goal is to make a change, not just to entertain, not just to amuse people, to inform people, but also for us to be able to say, you know, what are my thoughts and feelings about this? How would I approach this? How do I come across when I'm dealing with young people? So I'm real excited about the workbook, which I will be using to do training for mentors, for foster parents, for anyone, for any youth for that matter, not just foster youth, because a lot of our young people are dealing with emotional issues that we have no clue about.
Mm-hmm. How can individuals mm-hmm. get a hold of you and find out more information?
I have two websites. One is for my nonprofit, which is For a Child's Heart, and that's FORACHILDSHEART. That's www.forachildsheart.org. And you can look there and look at our vision, our mission, all of our activities, all of the other services that we provide. And you can also go to my website, which is www.talktomse.com. And that is geared pretty much toward, you know, my clinical work with all ages and adults, but it also includes my speaking, my authorship as well. And the For a Child Card deals primarily with my work with the foster youth, my television program, my radio program, other products that we have produced. We have a card line. We also, I started a small publishing company helping young people to get their stories published, and I'm real pleased that this February we just released our first book written by a former foster youth entitled The Amazing Generation. So you can find that there under the product section of Our Child's Heart, hearttalkpublications.com. So my whole thing is to give voice to young people and, you know, encourage and build and create that sense of community that is so lost.
Excellent. I applaud you for the work you're doing. And I noticed that you, your whole dynamics of who you are is catering to the whole family, you know, with you doing the counseling, you know, for the married couples. Now, do you have to be married to adopt?
No, you don't. I did it as a single parent. You don't have to be married. And there are a lot of myths about adopting, that you have to be married, that you have to own your own home, that you have to have all of these things. The primary thing is that you just have to have a sense of compassion and what it is that you desire to do, show yourself to be stable, and have room. Be willing to meet the needs of the children. And there aren't as many support systems when you actually do the adoption. There tend to be more when you do foster care, but it depends on the area you're in. There are just a lot. The foster care systems are flooded. Social workers are flooded. We're trying to find homes for children, and unfortunately, most of them don't really do thorough assessment of the foster parents in the homes, and that's why a lot of our children have additional things going on, and some kids won't say anything, or sometimes foster parents won't say, I'm having a hard time, until they come, and then they're ready to kick the kid out, because or they don't want the foster care agency to think it's incompetent. There are a lot of reasons why people don't speak. And I believe one of the things that I really try to ask for the kids that I work with is that the caregiver is willing to participate in the counseling as well, even if it's just one session a month, because that one keeps the child accountable, but it also increases the communication between the two of them. They would say a lot more in a session together than probably they would say without my being present. So it's not just so that they have to have therapy. It's so that they can learn some tools that are going to help them to have more stable placement, as well as help them in their relationship as they're becoming adults. Because we also have young people going into some very dysfunctional relationships at very young ages. And we don't want them repeating the cycles and the patterns.
Okay, I know that I've heard all kind of horror stories as it relates to adoption. One of the main issues is people are just taking in children, housing them simply for the paycheck. How are you or any other observer able to penetrate to reach that child to find out how they're really being treated? Because, you know, I can understand the fear, saying, well, I'd rather be here than just housed in a big room or institution with someone. What resources, what help is available for individuals that are going through situations like that?
Well, in general, it's the social worker. In general, it's the social worker, and kids hopefully will have a decent relationship with their social workers. But, again, a lot of them are busy. Also, if you have a child who has been labeled as a problem child, generally that child is not going to be hurt as well. So if the child says something and there are some complaints or allegations against the foster parent, a lot of times that child isn't believed. So that child ends up doing something to just get put out or just will run away and leave that foster home. The other part is there is something now that is really neat, and I believe it's happening in pretty much every state, and it's called CASA, C-A-S-A, which stands for Court-Appointed Special Advocate. And they are people who have been trained, who are matched with a child in the foster care system, who's like a mentor to them, but they also are the advocates to help be a liaison between the child, their attorney, the social worker, the schools, and any of the things that has to go in a court report. And for the most part, I have seen that has been a very positive outlet. And
is it national or just in California?
It's national. No,
okay.
It's national. It's a national organization. And I think you should be able to look up, Google it at CASA.org. And if that's not it, just Google foster care CASA, and it should bring that up. But, yeah, I've had the opportunity to work with some CASA workers, and actually one of my young people has become a CASA worker, and that has actually been very healing for him to be able to advocate for a child in a way that he was not advocated for.
Mm.
So that is something, and that's something I would encourage people to do. Become mentors. Become CASA representatives. And if the other thing, if you don't feel like you really can handle being a full-time foster parent, become a respite care worker, especially for the younger children, because when care providers need a break, generally there's no place. When I was doing it as a single parent, it was very difficult for me to get someone to keep both of my boys at the same time because they both were behaviorally challenged.
What is that called?
R-E-S-P-I-T-E. It's basically like short-term care, and it can be just a full day, or it could be overnight, or it can be up to a week, depending on what the agency that you're dealing with has available. But it's just actually when I was working in adolescent day treatment, one of the grandparents said, oh, respite, that's just where you rest a bit.
Oh.
But it basically gives the caregiver and the child some time away from one another, but the child is supervised, and it gives the care provider an opportunity to take a breath and breathe, because we all need that. We all need some time away from one another. And that's so that the child placement isn't disrupted, the child doesn't feel thrown away, but everybody gets a break. So
Can biological
another,
parents reach out to respite?
Actually, there are some programs, probably with budget cuts, there are probably not as many. However, through Children's Services, the Child Welfare Services, at least in our area, there used to be a program run. The only thing that someone had to state that their child was at risk for abuse in order to get the hours, which was really crazy to have to do that, and usually there was a long waiting list. But I would say that is definitely, everyone needs that. Now, and the way
But then it also would put that parent with the magnifying glass on them if they went to children and families, because then they will be deemed as incompetent to raise their child.
Well, that's not the way it's supposed to be set up. And we can say a lot of things about how systems are supposed to be run, but the reality is it really depends on the worker
mm-hmm.
that you work with. And I really would share with anyone, because having worked in the system, being the other side of the system was a nightmare for me. It was a nightmare. That's why I wrote the book, because the second part of the book, it just took me into a place I felt like I was in the Wizard of Oz or something. You know, with all of my credentials, with my degrees, with my experience, with my position in the community, all of that went right out the window, and I got to experience what it was like being on the other end and stuck in between the systems.
Well, I'm going to open up the line for anyone that has questions or comments or want to know more about this being Foster Care Month and what they can do if they want to be involved in, or if they can sign up for respite to relieve some of the foster parents so that they can get a break. But I think it's not fair that biological parents can't call up and say, can you just take my child for a minute, just for a couple of hours and let me breathe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
being
under scrutiny. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's what Big the Village is about, because I feel that as the village, we depend on a lot of programs to do things, and I have very little tolerance for dealing with systems. My thing is, we are the village. We create what we need, and we develop a support network, a system, and the way our society is now, it's not like it was, you know, when our parents or grandparents were around, where aunties and uncles are within walking or driving distance. Everybody's across, you know, the nation and even the world now. So we don't have that type of support, and we have to be that and develop that with one another. And I think that makes a world of difference. When we make up our mind, okay, you know, we become, you know, they say you find a need and you feel it. And the change is the change that we must become. That is so, so important. So my thing is not only with the foster kids, with all of our young people, to be able to connect with the adults so that we're on the same page and to say, you know, I would like to have some time with your child. You know, let him come over here and spend the day. You know, have some time out. I know that used to happen with me with my godmother. My mother gets sick of me. I get sick of her. I go to my godmother's and stay all day. And how many people have that now? How many people really have that? And, you know, we're under all types of stress. Yes.
And Evelyn, is there any type of programs or training that one must go through, this is Shirley, to become a foster parent? Or is there some type of, like, do you offer a guidebook, or is that something in every state that they have?
Every state, every county, and generally every state program is run by a county or what do they call it in the South, bills, or, well, that's in the East, but every system has their own child welfare system. Some call it child Department of Social Services, some call it child welfare system, and there are a couple of other names. However, if you go in and check on the foster care, most of them have foster parent orientation, which is probably a series of classes. You go to the orientation, and then you take a series of classes to help to prepare you for what type of behaviors, what type of situations you're dealing with, what are the legal ramifications, what the process of child dependency is, how a child comes into the system. And technically, a child is supposed to be in foster care only from 12 to 18 months. Usually, if a parent has not worked to getting things back together to be able to be an appropriate parent for their child, they're supposed to have it together in 1 year. If the child, the parent has done some work, then the judge will have the option to extend the dependency of the court for 6 more months. However, and then a permanent plan is supposed to be made. And with 500,000 children in the child welfare system, in the foster care system alone, and those are the ones who are only accounted for, you know that there is definitely a falling between the cracks. When we have children who are in the foster care system from the age of 9 months to 18 years of age, that is a problem. And that really infuriates me. There's no way that a child should spend their whole life in foster care. That's just unacceptable to me. So, but anyway, yes, they do take classes, and then they have their homes have to be certified. There's someone that's supposed to come out, check the home to make sure that there's enough room, that each child will have a bed to sleep in. Most only allow, I believe, 4 children in a room. If they have bunk beds, if they have regular twin beds, only 2 in a room. And they do things like safety checks to make sure that if there's a swimming pool, that the pool is fenced in. If there are electrical outlets and there are young children, that they have the safety plugs in there, that the doors where chemicals and things are kept have safety locks. So basically the home is childproof and safe for a child. So that tends to be a different branch than the social worker. You have someone who does licensing certification. So they get a foster care license, and then they're eligible to be able to take kids in. And unfortunately, a lot of the social workers don't even see the homes until they're either dropping the kid off or picking the kid up. So it's interesting to hear some of the stories from the kids themselves, how often they would see social workers, how often someone really checked on them.
So the children have no contact with their biological parents once they go into foster care.
No, that's not the case with everyone. It depends on what the reason the child came into care for. The goal is supposed to be to reunify the child with their biological parent. If the parent has any, seems like that there's any chance that that child, that parent, can become responsible. It all depends. Sometimes it's just a parent not having appropriate home care, appropriate home, to keep the child. And they say, you have to get your PG&E turned on. You have to make sure that, the place is safe and that the child has heat and all of the things in food in the refrigerator. But the most prevalent thing is substance abuse. If a parent is addicted to drugs or any other substance that prevents them from adequately parenting that child, getting that child to school, et cetera. So they'll try to provide some services. This is what's supposed to happen now. It doesn't always happen, but this is the way it's supposed to work, that parent has services. Then they take parenting classes. If the child, the parent has beat the child or disciplined them in a way that's considered to be inappropriate, they'll have the parent to go through parenting classes. So basically the parent has every 6 months supposed to go back to court to say, this is what I've done. Sometimes they have supervised visits with the parents, whether it's on weekend or maybe at the welfare office during the course of the week. It depends on, again, how functional the parent is, how old the child is. And they can do perhaps weekend visits and eventually go home. But if that doesn't happen, a lot of times parents disappear and they don't know where they are. And they'll pop up out of the middle of nowhere and say, I want to see my child. Well, depending on who the caseworker is, they might call the foster parent and say, well, bring the child here so this child can have the visit. And that gets carried on and on and on and on, unfortunately. But it always depends on the situation with the parent. And if it's a parent who's in an abusive relationship that failed to protect that child, then usually the criteria is that the parent separates from that, the abusive parent, and go to some parenting classes. And if the parent chooses that mate or that spouse over the child, it can just hang in indefinitely. So there are a lot of reasons. So if you listen to some of my programs, also Block Talk, which comes on right after yours on Tuesday evening, it's interesting hearing the stories of young people, how the various circumstances that brought them into the system, the various circumstances that prevented them from getting out the system, are how some of them went back and forth. And it's amazing. You have some because of parent substance abuse, some because of parent mental illness, some because of the death of a parent, just all kinds of things. Some because, the children were abused, neglected, and it's just amazing. It's just amazing. And the young people who do get through that and come through are just so resilient. And my key is to be able to pinpoint and find out what are the things that contributed to their survival and coming through it and being productive, because that's what I want to hone in on so that we can help spread that resilience and give more support to more of our young people and give them a chance of hope so that we'll have more college graduates and more high school graduates, more young people getting their master's degrees and their doctorates, because they're out there, but we don't hear about it. No one talks about that. All they want to do is talk about all the negativity. And the young people, they hear all of the statistics of the things that are that they have against them. We want to show them what they have going for them.
Well, Ms. E, what is the difference, or is it one and the same, between a foster parent and adoptive parent? And if they are different, is there a different costs or assistance that they get as it relates to the welfare of the child?
Okay, the foster parent has really no legal authority over the child. The foster parent is just working for the system. for the most part. The county is still the legal guardian of the child once when they're in foster care. So they are the ones that make decisions about where this child will go, what has to be done. They're the ones who the judge signs paperwork on anything legal that needs to be done. When you adopt a child, that child becomes legally your child. And once it's finalized, they're no longer a part of the system. It's just like that's your biological child. And all legal, you're legally responsible for them. That child can or cannot take on, you know, your name, whichever they decide. Depending on the age of the child, you can have a birth certificate reissued bearing, listing you as the parent of that child. And it's just like, you know, they were born to you legally. So in that way, no one else is involved. You don't have social workers coming. You don't have anybody, you know, coming to do a regular report on you. It's like the child gets to have a quote-unquote regular family. So that's the difference. In terms of what's available, interestingly enough, my program tonight is going to be on a situation of siblings who were adopted and the adoptive mom died, and the person who's taking care of them now is unable to get any type of assistance. In foster care, the foster parent gets a foster care payment every month to take care of the child. And the cost, the amount that they're paid depends on the area they're in, if they consider the child to be a special needs child or not. So it varies on the agency and the area, the state, the county. As an adoptive parent, generally, if you do a public adoption of a child who was a foster child, there, if the child is considered to be an older child, which generally is no longer an infant, or if the child has special needs, whether it's a sibling group, a child of color, or a child that has some type of learning or physical disability, there is a subsidy called AAP, Adoption Assistance Program payment. Unfortunately, many social workers either don't know or they don't inform the foster parents of that. And for that reason, a lot of people don't adopt because they don't feel like they can financially afford. But children are eligible, and it's supposed to be based not on the parent's needs, on the child's needs. And that's supposed to be good until that child becomes an adult. Unfortunately, there are a lot of things that are going on with that, with social workers and people trying to save the money, trying to save money as if it's coming out of their own pockets. So we're actually going to be addressing that tonight, because they're saying now that these two children who are special needs, who are 9 and 11 years of age, are no longer available for adoption assistance just because the adoptive parent passed. Well, someone has still got to take care of them. So it's really jumping through the hoops. And so we just have to be aware and, again, be the village, be informed, and know what our gifts are. My gift is that one-on-one, doing the hard work. I love nurturing. I love the healing process with the emotional, the spiritual aspect, the psychological part. I don't do systems and politics well, but there are some people who are very good at that, and there needs to be advocates in our political systems that are going forth looking at the rules and the regulations and the laws that are passed or not being passed that impact our young people. And everyone says, you know, well, it's a money issue. And my thing is, you know what? All the money in the world won't make a difference unless our hearts are in it, because a lot of the money is being spent anyway. So, but that's the primary difference between foster care and adoption. And some people can go in and bring a child in under what's called foster adopt, meaning that child is not legally free for adoption yet, but they're pretty sure that they're not going back to their biological parent. So either the biological parent have to relinquish their parental rights, or the parental rights are terminated in the superior court. And that
How
is
often
process.
Does that happen?
Oh, frequently. Frequently. And actually, they stopped doing that just on the regular basis, because then we ended up with children who were really orphans because they didn't have any legal parents besides the system, and they never got adopted. But if someone is really going in to foster adopt, and actually that was the case with both of my boys, it was the intent to adopt. My two girls, it was strict foster care because there was a family that was planning to adopt them. So I took them as foster children until they got to an adoptive placement. So, you know, and as the social worker, every case is different. The social worker should be informed, but also a potential adoptive parent or foster parent should really be aware of some of the questions to ask when they're looking at becoming involved in these children's lives.
Well, I definitely applaud the work that you're doing, and I know you're on Blog Talk too, so I would like you to give the information on how they can listen in on your show every Tuesday after Hot Topics from the Soul. You can tune in and listen to Miss E, a.k.a. the Heart Lady.
Yes. We are also blogtalkradio.com/hearttalkwithmisse. HearttalkWithMisse. And you can also find that information on our website, www.forachildsheart.org. And you can see our radio program archives there and see the faces of the many young people young and old, that we've interviewed. You can look at the TV show and look at some of the clips from our past television program. There's a lot. You can spend a day at our website. Pictures from our event for the past years for National Foster Care. And we call our program, instead of National Foster Care, I call it Foster Pride, because I found out that a lot of the celebrations that were taking place during National Foster Care Month were honoring foster parents. And that's well and good, but the real true heroes are our kids who have achieved throughout the course of the year. So I always do an event called Foster Pride, give out awards for those who have made the greatest changes during the course of the year, for those who have excelled academically, for those who've shown extra achievements by going out in the community doing things. We try to do scholarships when we have enough money to do so. So that's another way that people can support us. This year we have a college graduate from Philander Smith College in Arkansas, who just got her bachelor's degree last Saturday and is planning on going ahead and getting her master's. And we have another teen mom who is graduating from high school this year. So this year we have two graduates. 3 years ago we had like a total of 7 graduates. We had from every level. We had high school, junior high school, junior college, bachelor's degree, and master's degree. So, you know, I'm just very, very proud and very excited for our young people. And unfortunately, even with all of these achievements, our young people are still going through that, not having support, you know, to have achieved all that and not even have someone to show up at your graduation. That's just, to me, that hurts.
I can definitely identify with some of that. I'm actually here in New York. My son is graduating with his master's, and I'm very excited about that. And I'm glad that God has spared my life to be able to be a part of his life through his journey. And we're getting ready to wrap up another Hot Topics from the Soul. I am going to be in Chicago on Friday. I have an event will be at the Clarion in Chicago, Illinois. So those of you that want information about that, you can visit my website, arisebyvnp.com. That is my corporate website, or simply email me at soultopics@gmail.com. The tour continues. Fight for Your Dreams tour continues in Chicago, May 19th at 7 o'clock at the Clarion, and you can reach out and call me at 954-724-0900 for more information about that. I'm excited about that work and the transformation that's occurred in so many people's lives as a result of this tour. And I definitely encourage you to visit Miss E's website, Evelyn, the Heart Lady, because it's a heart thing. We've got to do things from our heart. We have got to be willing to impart into somebody else's life, because this journey is never about us. It's what God wants to do through us. And those little ones that we are reaching out to, we're reaching out to secure their future so they can be doctors and lawyers and entrepreneurs and even the president. You know, these are our people that we influence. They are waiting for us to reach out and touch them, to pull them up, not put them out. And it has to be a heart connection. Evelyn, any closing remarks?
Actually, you just reminded me of something I forgot to put a plug in. One of our favorite foster children and adoptees, Mr. Les Brown, who has been our keynote speaker a few times with our young people. And actually, one of our publications is a fundraiser to provide training for young people in the foster care system who want to become speakers. And we have created a compiled a book. It's entitled Meeting Les Brown, Miss Mamie Brown's Baby Boy. And you can find that on our product page. And all of the proceeds to that go to young people who are wanting to learn the trait of speaking and sharing their updating the world. So you can find that on www. Heart Talk Publications, or also www.4childcard. And it's just a compilation of stories that many of us had told one another. And I said, you know what, this would make a good book, because anyone who's met Les knows it's more than just a meeting. And interestingly enough, I have two or three of our young people who actually shared their stories in the book as well. So please check it out. And, again, all the proceeds go to 4ChildCard. So
thank
I just want to
so
thank
much,
you again for this opportunity. And if anyone has any insights or questions, I would like for me to come and speak, to do any training for mentoring groups, church groups, any workers, or even the youth groups, foster care agencies. I'd be more than glad, and you can email me at misse@4childcard.org or me at talktomisse.com.
Again, thank you so much. And ladies and gentlemen, you know, when I bring individuals to Soul Topics, it's because I believe in the work that they're doing. I've seen the work they're doing. I've seen the investment and the dedication that they've made to imparting into our society. And I want you to support them. You know, the tragedy in it all is you don't support something unless it affects you firsthand, and that is a tragedy. Why not invest in individuals now? Because in doing so, you secure your future. Shirley has a foundation against all odds. It caters to cancer, brings awareness to cancer. Everyone knows somebody who's been affected by cancer. Support the foundations that are grassroots, that are working in their community. My foundation, The Soul of a Woman, serves domestic violence. Cater to those grassroots foundations that have a pulse on the community. Well, you listening and you say, well, I give the United Way and I give to the Red Cross, but you know, a lot of that goes to administrative fees and very little of your dollars. If you give $10 to American, to the Red Cross, $9 goes to administration, a dollar may actually go to the cause, where when you focus on the nonprofits that are right there in the community serving, 99% goes to serving the community. So I want you to consider that and be aware of that, and reach out to Miss E. And if you didn't get her information, or if you want more information regarding Shirley's Foundation Against All Odds, you can email me at soultopics@gmail.com, soultopics@gmail.com. And I look forward to seeing you again and hearing you again next week on Hot Topics from the Soul. Have a good night.
Thank you. God bless.
Good
bye
night.
Bye. God bless.